I gained weight after 2 years. I was depressed, man. I was drinking and doing drugs. I was like, I'm like, this is not going to happen again. But then it did. We won through a loophole where you could get licensed in at their discretion at certain states. So we went to lesser known states, right, and boxed. And like, then I get to Connecticut, a little bit better state, ESPN. I'm physically like back. I knocked this Shannon Miller out. He's a contender in like a round and a half. And like, I'm on the plane with my wife, wasn't even my fiance yet, and I'm like, I whisper to her, I go, I'm just done. I think I'm over. My team is celebrating the back. New York's got to let us fight now. You've had 5 wins on TV, and like, we're never going to beat this system, and I don't think I'm in it anymore. You know.
This episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski is sponsored by Chef's Famous Italian Restaurant, home of the Spaghetti Parm, and located at 291 Seneca Street in Buffalo. It's time now for Nuff Said with your host, Bob Kuczynski. Bob's guest on this episode is Buffalo's former undefeated boxing celebrity, Baby Joe Mazie.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Nuff Said with yours truly. Excited today because I have a young man, I still think of him as a young man, who I we were just talking before we started. He kind of grew up right in front of my eyes. The undefeated Buffalo boxer, Baby Joe Mazie. And Joe, back in the day when I was doing Empire Sports, you were a fixture on the Empire Sports Network.
I bring it up to my wife, Michelle, a lot. Empire Sports Network was my little prime, my little 20 minutes that I had, you know? I mean, you guys were in your prime, so I was on a lot. You and I were together a lot. Yeah. So I think about you often. You yourself were instrumental in my publicity and my marketing. The whole network was. And I have so many great memories of your team.
So let me put it this way. A undefeated white boxer, you're like a picnic to ants. Everybody wanted a piece of Joe Mazie. And hopefully I didn't fall in that category, but you were a local guy. You and your dad were kind of doing it almost on your own. I'm getting ahead of myself because there's so many things I want to talk about. But first question I got for you, before we go any further, and I'm sure you've told me this at one point. Where'd the baby come from? Baby Joe Mazie, which ended up being a great boxing name. But where did baby come from?
Did it?
Yeah, because it was like an anti, you don't think of a boxer as a baby, but then, you know, Baby Joe Mazie, then out comes this burly, you know.
You know, I was the baby of the family. So I have an older brother, Tom, always athletic, handsome, kind of like the prom king guy. And I was the chubby, pinch the cheeks. My cousins were older. And I was very late to mature. And I mean, very late. But I played sports my whole life, watching my older brother. So I was able to hang with them and hang on the team. I was never the star. I was good. I was tough. I was just tough. I was never a star athlete. I just made the team. And it was, you know, and but even like, I'm telling you, when I say late, it's 10th, 11th grade, 5'3", chubby, still tough, playing on the football team, wrestling. And I grew in like 12th grade or even after, and I grew a lot quickly. And, you know, I started boxing, and when you turn pro, like, you need a nickname. But my family always called and referred to me as Baby Joe. But it was in one ear, out the other. I never really, you know. And I'm like, well, what's my crazy nickname going to be? And like, well, you're Baby Joe. And I'm like, that can't be my boxing name, you know. So it's just stuck, and I had no choice, really.
I think it's a great name,
yeah,
for a boxer. Baby Joe Mazie. So you come up through the ranks as an amateur. You're an alternate for the Olympic team. Yeah. But let's go past that, because there's a long way between being a Empire State Games, you know, champion and competing for the World Heavyweight Championship. So at what point did you turn pro, and how did it get, was it slow going for you in the beginning? I mean, did anybody think you had it? You had the potential. I mean, how did that go?
No, I'll back up. You know, the amateur days. You know, in '93, I won the Empire State Games. What shocked everybody when I knocked out Haseem Rahman, later to become two-time heavyweight champion of the world. He knocked out Lennox Lewis. He was great. People knew back then he was going to be something, and I was like, I was shocked myself.
Did you knock him out?
Yeah. He and I had become friends. We fought a few times. I beat him 2 out of 3, I think. And we went on as amateurs, and my dad was saying, listen, the Olympics is coming around. I know you won several Golden Gloves. I know you won Empire State Games a few times, but the Olympics is in a year, year and a half. Like, you've got to take this serious. I'm like, I'm not thinking that way. I'm like, Olympics? We're having fun here. This is a hobby. He's like, no, you're making some noise. I'm like, I don't know, you know. That year that I committed myself, it was all of like 95, I traveled so much. I worked so hard, and I'm trying to be seen in national tournaments. And I was always runner up. I would get close, you know? But I'm beating guys that I didn't know were good. My naiveness helped me because I was new to the scene. You know, I'd go in the ring, I'd win, and the crowd was almost quiet. I'd be like, why? I mean, they're like, do you know who you just beat? I'm like, no, not really. Because that guy, we've been grooming that guy. He's like a...
Right.
And I'd be like, no.
And that worked to your advantage because
really
you were nervous
did.
Before those fights,
I really
right?
did. Yeah. I was just naive. And whatever happens, happens. But so I ended up making the Olympic team as an alternate. Lawrence Klebe defeated me in that final one on NBC. And it's probably the best. I wasn't ready. I wanted that. After a while, I wanted to be that Olympian so bad. I'm like, I can't believe. The night before, I was in Augusta, Georgia. I beat Klebe on a Friday. We have to fight again on Saturday. And I beat him so badly on that Friday night that I don't want to say I'm young and immature, but I got a little like, I'm going to the Olympics.
Right, exactly.
I'm the Olympian. Dad, you were right all fucking along these last 2 years. I can't believe you were right. Boy, he knocked me out. That was the first time. I think it was the first round. And he landed. Klebe was really, really good. And the guy was like 33 years old. I was a kid, you know. But I'm glad he's a great guy. I got to spend the next 90 days with him and Floyd Mayweather and Antonio Tarver, David Reed, gold medalist, and train together. It was the best experience of my life being the Olympic alternate. But I wasn't ready. My first fight would have been against Klitschko. I wasn't at that pace yet, you know? So after we came home, I said, what are we going to do now, Dad? He's like, well, do you want to fight pro a little bit? I go, I don't know. I got this offer to become a state trooper. I go, you're a cop. My grandpa's a cop. I just thought I'd be a cop. He's like, you're an Olympian, technically. You should just try it. I go, I'll try it. I'll probably get beat in 3-4 fights, and then I'll just come back. So we took a nice slow route because my amateur career was very compressed and fast, where these other guys like DeVera Williamson and these Antonio Tarvers, they had been boxing since they were 13. I had been boxing for 2.5 years, 3, you know? I traveled for 1 full year on the scene of the U.S. team. These guys have been doing that for years.
Right.
I didn't even know how. They taught me how to travel. And so I took a slow route and got some experience. My first 10 or 12 fights, Bob Spagnuolo and my dad were my co-managers. And I got some fights and rounds under my belt. You know, they would criticize me these first 12, 13 fights. Macy's taking it slow. I am taking it slow. But I traveled and worked hard. I had to work hard because I wasn't naturally good. I know people say, well, you're 30. I wasn't. My brother was naturally good. And he didn't work hard. I wasn't naturally good, and I worked hard. So I would take the work ethic, you know. I had to work hard. But I was learning in this every fight in my pro career. In 1997, I fought at Harlem Theater on the undercard of an HBO card. The main event was Lou Savarese, my sparring partner, and David Izon. David Izon beat Lou Savarese, who I later ended up meeting here in Buffalo. So it's kind of funny how that happened. My first pro fight, 1997 in Harlem, and I didn't get on TV on HBO, of course, but I was on the undercard. It was so surreal to me, and the lights and the TV and being paid, and it was just great. But I'm thinking, this will be fun. I can tell some stories to my grandkids, you know. But you know, I kept winning and getting a little tougher opposition, and ESPN spotted me. Well, actually, MSG, Empire Sports, ESPN, and started getting some TV coverage. Being an Olympic alternate helped. But I was learning all along. I kept learning and learning and learning and getting better because of my trainer, Juan De Leon. I had the De Leon brothers. And they were really, really good and the best thing that ever happened to me. And I think back to how this all collided, my dad and the De Leon brothers and Bob Spagnuolo in Texas and even like Tony Holden later on and Sugar Ray. It was meant to be. It was just meant to be.
Well, so let me stop you for a second, because I've heard, first of all, I grew up being a big boxing fan. I couldn't tell you who the heavyweight champ is right now. We're going to talk about that later. But I've heard analysts say that to be a good boxer, I mean, you need like X amount of years under your belt so that once you're in the ring, it's instinctive. That oftentimes, if you've only got 2 years of experience or 3 years of experience, mechanically you're like trying to think, what do I do next? Whereas if you've got enough rounds under your belt, it comes, especially if you get hit. You instinctively, you kind of, through repetition, you know what to do. You know what I'm talking about?
I do, and that's true to an extent. But no matter who you're boxing, no matter if they have 10 years experience or 1 year experience, you have to get past, or maybe you... their toughness. There are a lot of great boxers out there that don't have the toughness. And what I learned about myself, what God gave me in boxing that I didn't know I had in me, was I'm a pretty tough dude. I could take a beating, and I'm not going to quit. Right. And I'm not the best.
You've got heart.
I'm not the best boxer. I mean... But usually, it's not the talented guy who wins. It's who's got the heart and who's got the will. Right. Who can get knocked down and get back up? I'm not saying I couldn't be beat or get knocked out. If anyone could. But boxing teaches you, it's such a metaphor to life. People see that I'm 36-0 and I won 36 fights. Do you know what they didn't see? The beatings I took. The sparring. The thousands and thousands and years of sparring. And I sparred guys better than me, more experienced, faster. I wasn't the best sparrer. I was pretty clutch. Fight nights, I was good. The beatings I took, I mean, I cried. There was days I'd come out of the ring, I cried. I'd be like, this is not for me.
Yeah, why am I doing
this? Why am I doing this? My team would come down on me, and I'm bloodied. I got, you know, people think, well, Giroff's the only guy that knocked me down, really. I know, or Barrett. I got knocked out of the ring. I was on the cement. I've gotten beat up so badly. No one sees that.
In training. All right, so you're an up-and-comer. And like I said earlier, the attraction was you were a white heavyweight. And we all know, I mean, there's been movies made about it. But you're an up-and-comer. In this town, you are media darling, except for the Buffalo News. And look, I can go into this, and I won't go into it too long, because there are still reporters here today. And I was like, what's your problem with Macy? He's not fighting anybody. He's beating everybody. He fights. Do you want him to get in a ring, get knocked out? Would you be happy? So there was a weird, because it was like the Buffalo News wanted to go the other way. And there was one guy in particular, and we're going to get into the whole Tim Graham story, because that really, and I've had Tim on this podcast. So anyway, you're up and coming, and everybody wants a piece of Joe Macy. I mean, literally, right? You had, and I remember very vividly, we're at Empire Sports, and in the waiting room, so to speak, in the lounge, is Sugar Ray Leonard with Mike Bellani. Mike's a great guy.
Love Mike.
And... everybody wanted to take over your career, your promotion. Your dad was extremely protective. Talk a little bit about that and why that was.
I still don't know why or where it came from with Jack Macy, my dad, the 40-year Buffalo police officer, and his marketing ideas and skill and genius, because I think all along, when I committed to the Olympics or I was going to turn pro, he's like, this is going to be huge in Buffalo. And we're going to bring the heavyweight championship to Buffalo. Then he would start to change. In fact, no. We're going to fight for it in Buffalo. Like, we're that's, I go, how do you even figure all that? I don't even know how you even figure that. I haven't won my second pro fight in years. And I think his genius was, I'll tell you where things changed. You know, this was in, I was just turning pro, end of my amateur career, and he got me involved in the community a lot. And I started doing things. I was getting a lot of media in 96, that amateur year, right. And they were following my tournaments, and I was on the news a lot. But I would go to children's hospitals with Rob Ray. I would go to Roswell. I was going to fundraising events. I was on AM Buffalo. I started co-hosting with Linda during in between fights. I started doing these things in the community, and I didn't see it right away. Why? But it was really helpful. I had older people coming up to me, not knowing I'm a boxer, thinking I'm just like out in the community or I host AM Buffalo or something.
Well, you were a unicorn. I mean, back in the 30s and the 40s, you know, Buffalo was a boxing town. In the 90s, who was a boxer from Buffalo? Nobody. I mean, there were some.
True.
There were some. But you caught the attention. So now you're climbing the ladder, and I'm trying to condense this because we want to make this watchable. So you're climbing the ladder, you're getting some television fights. I vividly remember you were trying to get a fight at the Niagara Falls Convention Center, which is now the Seneca Casino. There's younger people watching this going,
yeah, right.
That was a convention, yes. So, and I remember, and you guys were looking to put it on yourselves. And I went to John Regas, who, you know, the CEO of Adelphia, and John agreed he'd pick up the tab to put the fight on and you guys could pay him afterwards. You were given the advice by, and I won't bring up the name, but you were given it by somebody who said, nah, don't do that. And then you pulled off the fight. Somebody did do the fight. I think there was a Canadian promoter that...
Alan Tremblay.
Yeah, right. And it was televised. I think Empire carried it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had a great crowd at the Niagara Falls Convention Center. The pinnacle to me, because I remember bringing my oldest son to the arena, HBO, you were the main card. You were the main attraction, live on HBO. There was like 16,000 people in the arena. It was electric. I mean, it was Hollywood had come to Buffalo. And, of course, you ruin it all by knocking the guy out in the first round.
Sorry.
I mean, it was over before. But everybody, I mean, and who did you beat that night?
There was two fights at Niagara Falls Convention Center. One was Jorge Luis Gonzalez,
right.
The Cuban champion. And then it was Smokin' Burt Cooper.
Right, I remember that one.
And then we went to UB.
Right, you had one at the arena.
That was Sugar Ray Leonard, Keith McKnight. That, people tell me, was one of the better... People say, man, I was at UB. And I think it was the sound. It was kind of, because it's very bowl-shaped. It's very good arena for a fight. And I remember being in the ring, being announced. We had a great ring announce. I had Keith McKnight. And I remember, this guy's got the microphone 6 feet away from me. And I don't know if he's saying, introducing me or introducing Keith. And me, I'm saying...
Because it was so loud?
It was so loud.
Yeah.
It was so loud. It was great.
Was Dave Hickson one of the promoters venue for that fight?
I'm not sure.
I think he was a local. He was a wrestling high school wrestling referee. Is why I remember that.
I think
anyway.
But that was a Sugar Ray production.
And then who did you beat on HBO in the arena?
Then we had David Eisen, HBO, Robert Davis, and DeVero Williamson. DeVero Williamson was the HBO Night of the Young Heavyweights. That was a big. That was the final one at HSBC Arena. That was a big one.
Okay,
DeVero Williamson.
Okay, so you're...
That was 30 seconds.
How high did you climb as far as in the rankings? You were ranked contender?
After the win with Giroff, I was number one in the WBC, number four in the WBO. I was next in line for a title shot after the win with Vasily Giroff at Mandalay Bay on HBO.
Okay, and you've just brought us to the crossroads of your career.
Yeah.
So you're fighting Giroff, who was, I believe, the cruiserweight world champion?
He was Olympic gold medalist, fastest guy to ever become undisputed, in my opinion, the best cruiserweight who ever lived, other than Holyfield. And he turned heavyweight at a couple of successful fights, trying to make some noise in the heavyweight division, and he kind of ran into
And at the you're beating him throughout the whole fight. At the end of, what did you have, 10 rounds?
10-round fight.
At the end of the ninth round, he hits you in the back of the head, right? What they call rabbit punch?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, I think so.
So in the 10th round, you get knocked down.
About four times.
You were so far ahead of points.
I had very little memory. I'm not trying to be funny. I had very little memory of it.
It was, I mean, I remember watching the fight, and it's still up there on YouTube.
10th round is almost graphic. I got battered.
You've got to stay on your feet. You can't get knocked out. That's the only way you're losing the fight, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So after that fight's over, explain the process. You end up getting an MRI, and it becomes public that you had a brain bleed. And that was really, that brought your career to a halt, right? Because
it did. The winner of Giroff or me, which was, I mean, we're going to get a title shot. After I get out of the ring, I'm very confused. I look back on that video, I've only seen it a handful of times, and I give a great interview to Harold Letterman. So I had my wits about me in the moment. I must have, or faked it really good, but I don't have any memory of
that. You're in a fog,
I don't have any memory. I remember being, Tom, my brother, tells me, I was in the shower naked, and he had to go, I'm like, you better get dad. I've been hurt before, but this is not right, you know? But anyway, you get out of the ring, and some physician comes over after you go 10 or 12 battered rounds, I don't care win or lose, and they look in your eyes, how you feel, tap you on your butt, you're dismissed. You're no longer under the care and condition of the commission that you fought in that case, Nevada. You're off. You were cleared because they look in your eye. I'm an advocate for safety these days for boxers and athletes. Rules have to change. But
yeah, because that's not much of an examination.
No.
Right.
They're like, how are you doing? I'm like, good. I think it was a dentist. I don't even know. Like, the guy was like, are you good? I'm like, yeah. So I go home, and I'm still not well after a few days. I'm like, this is not right. Dizzy and what have you. So I go locally, Dr. Plunkett, great neurosurgeon, and does the test. They find these bleeds. And no surgery, no medication needed, but it's like, you need rest, a lot of rest. I go, Dr. Plunkett, I'm fighting for a world title. We're talking to Mike Tyson. That already begun. Mike Tyson.
To fight Tyson.
So quickly, without getting off topic of the injury, I could have went to fight Klitschko in Germany for, I don't know, $1.5 million, get my ass kicked, come back with probably half that money. And I wanted to fight Klitschko. I was never afraid. I think I would have surprised a lot of people. But having said that, I would have gotten the opportunity. Now, think about it. Mike calls and says, now this is hangover Mike Tyson. This is not 1997 Mike Tyson. This is 300-pound drug addict Mike Tyson, who I love, by the way, calls and says, I want to come to Buffalo. Let's split it, 60-40, whatever. And he was going to take, that's your hometown. We'll go to get 50,000 people.
Right.
He had already lost four of his last fights to guys that I've beat up sparring. And I'm like, this is going to be huge, huge money. So we were trying to get towards that. But in the meantime, we have this injury that should not be made public because it's not part of, I'm not under athletic care anymore. I'm under my own care. It was made public. There's a whole HIPAA violation involved there. So that's how everyone found out
huge,
about it.
Yeah, huge.
Huge. So, I was suspended from Nevada State Athletic Commission. A great rule is if you're suspended in one state, you're suspended in all the states, because the old days, it was not the case. Now, I'm like, geez, I'm suspended. Right when I'm supposed to be fighting for big money, what do I do? And we had Paul Cambria, very, very costly. I love this guy, but I mean, he's not cheap. We took many trips to hearings in Nevada, back and forth. It ended up taking 2 years. And this 2 years, I'm getting depressed, thinking, this isn't looking good. I'm at the helm of Nevada. They have this white middle class kid, and everyone seems to, they want to look good and they want to look safe, and we can't let this happen. And the truth of the matter is, they let it happen every day.
Well, I was going to bring that up. I mean, you can't tell me that the Ken Nortons, the Spinks, Ali, all these guys.
I don't care.
They later had all kind of issues. I mean, Ali is the most famous one. obviously they all had concussions and brain bleeds at some point, but it wasn't public.
I got caught.
Yeah, Vegas didn't want to be the one to say, well, we know you had it, but we're going to put you in there anyway. Because if something did happen, right?
Yeah.
But if nobody knows, they're putting these guys in the ring every week.
That's why some of the rules have to be changed. But anyway, anyone at a contender level has had a bleed of some kind. The fact is, there is no data today saying that if you've had a bleed in a certain area, are you at more risk in that area? Is it weakened? Is it trying to get another bleed? No one knows that. That data is still not. It's like CTE can't be diagnosed until you're already gone. But look, more MRIs maybe need to be taken. Why do we take MRIs before a fight and not after? So someone knows, listen, maybe you need to not spar or schedule.
Well, because of the money, Joe, right?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And they had a New York and Nevada, the two major boxing states. I don't want to say they're in cahoots, but Joe Macy's value was New York, maybe Nevada a little bit. I have no value in Texas. I have no value in New Mexico. But that was the whole point all along. My dad says, we're bringing boxing back to Buffalo. Right. We would love to travel. I lived in Houston. I lived in Puerto Rico. I went overseas. I trained everywhere. I fought everywhere. But we wanted to bring boxing back to Buffalo. So having fought in Madison Square Garden, having fought at MGM Grand, Mandalay Bay was awesome. Every boxer wants to get there, Bob, but I want to fight in Buffalo. You know what I mean? My money was made in Buffalo. This was my hometown. This was my support system.
Well, you were referred to as the fourth professional franchise in Buffalo.
I think third. Third franchise.
Well, okay, so you're stepping over the Bisons. All right. So, but when you were in the ring, the HBO fight, you're wearing a Sabres jersey. I vividly remember with the goat head on the front. I mean, you were Buffalo. You were Buffalo. All right, so, and I'm trying my best to try to condense this because it is a lengthy story. But so now you can't fight in Vegas. You can't fight in New York. You did fight a couple times out of state. You didn't fight anybody of consequence, but you're trying to remain active. And then it's finally at some point you realize this isn't going anywhere, right?
Yeah, I fought about four fights. The fifth fight I got with against Shannon Miller, great guy. It was like a televised fight, a 30-second knockout. I was kind of physically, I gained weight after 2 years. I was depressed, man. I was drinking and doing drugs. I'm like, this is not going to happen again. But then it did. We won through a loophole where you could get licensed in at their discretion at certain states. So we went to lesser known states and boxed, and like then I get to Connecticut, a little bit better state, ESPN. I'm physically like back. I knocked this Shannon Miller out. He's a contender in like a round and a half. And like I'm on the plane with my wife, wasn't even my fiance yet. And I'm like, I whisper to her, I go, I'm just done. I think I'm over. My team is celebrating the back. New York's got to let us fight now. You've had five wins on TV, and like we're never going to beat this system. And I don't think I'm in it anymore. You know, I don't think I have what it, I don't want to do this.
You don't want to do it anymore. You were how old at that point?
Kind of disgusted by the business of it all. I love the sport. The business doesn't. I'm 34 years old. You know, I'm getting a little up there, and. My two best years in that legal battle were gone, and I just didn't have it anymore. And I was becoming more of a threat. And I look back at it now, and I don't want to hurt my dad's feelings, but at the time of the injury when it was confirmed and released, he should have taken a back seat. He was always defending, as a proud dad does. I love the guy so much. But maybe he should have...
He made it personal in Buffalo with Tim Graham, right? It became literally a pissing match. And as Larry Felser, the great columnist for the News, once said, you don't get in an argument with a guy who buys ink by the gallons. It just they're going to get the last word. Now, I'm going to fast forward. I'm doing the Buffalo Boxing Hall of Fame dinner at Eliot Apollo's. You're there. Tim Graham's there. And I remember thinking, wow, this is, you can't make it write the script. But that was the night that you guys kind of buried the hatchet, hugged it out. And there was some, and I remember
was
Tim got up.
Was Sports Hall of Fame? Buffalo
it was
sport.
A Buffalo Boxing Hall of Fame. You guys hugged it out at the end because Tim talked, he referred to your mom who had passed. He had some family similar issues. And you guys kind of like, and you've been on his podcast, so that's in the past. And I love Tim
with me. I don't know about with my dad, but
well, and you said you mentioned that with your brother too, like whether your brother, like you're fine with me, but if my brother's coming, but anyway, look at it.
I have just learned, not only boxing, but of course maturity has taught me so much, and I don't ever want to be the remember when guy. I don't ever want to be living in my past. I have no regrets, and it is what it is, and I could see both sides. I just know the one thing that always surprised me, Tim or Sullivan or whatever, like, I never claimed to be the best boxer. I just wanted to do what's best for Buffalo and give my best. Bob, when you think about it, if I was born in Miami, if I was born in Vegas, if I was born in LA, if I was born in Chicago, if I was born in Arkansas, what happened here in Buffalo at that time would never have happened. It could only happen in Buffalo.
Right.
If I was born in Arkansas or St. Louis, would I have been 36-0? Maybe. Would I have had 20,000 people come to HSBC Arena three times or the arena there locally? That never would have happened. That's what makes this town unique. And when I tell you that would never happen in any other city, why here? It wasn't the boxing, and it wasn't even me. We are so supportive. I don't know where I'd be. I would be kicked to the curb by some promoter, hungry and homeless if I lived somewhere else. I would have went to Don King. I would have just like, it was funny. I remember going to Don King's house several times, and he's like, you can't become a contender out of Buffalo, Joe. He goes, how many times am I going to tell you? He goes, you need to come to my camps. Here's $1 million. He didn't sign the check. He left it blank. And I'm like, geez, I mean, what are we going to do? And my dad goes, no, Don, you're wrong. We're going to do this out of Buffalo. And I remember after our second HSBC fight, 20,000 people against Robert Davis, Don called. He's like, listen, you guys need help up there. You guys need me. My dad's like, why? We don't need you.
Right.
And I remember that on the speakerphone. He's like, we don't need you, Don. We all due respect. We just don't. And we've already been to Madison Square Garden, been to MGM, Mandalay Bay. We just don't need you.
Well, and he's got a long track record of ripping off boxers,
true,
left and right.
I mean, now, had I been born in another city, I might have had to take that
route. Absolutely.
But, like, I'm born in Western New York, and this is why, I don't know, my popularity only comes from these people that are incredible and that I have a life after boxing.
Well, first off, if you were born in Arkansas, just think how bad the spaghetti sauce would have been. You would have had a whole different culinary experience.
But communities like we're chefs. Lou Bellatier, the late Gene Vukelic, who just passed, Tri Distributors, came.
He was a big supporter.
Big support came to me when we realized, geez, this little amateur adventure, we're trying to go to the Olympics and get on the U.S. team, which I did. We need some money, you know. Gene got Dennis DiPaolo and the Bellatier and a huge group of business people, Mr. Spano, and they were called the Buffalo Ringleaders. And they got tickets to the fights forever. We hosted parties, and they gave me that little kickoff financially. And I wasn't making money early in my pro career. It wasn't until later. But I had so much support here that I'm so grateful to live here.
Yeah, everybody adopted you. Everybody
adopted you. I love traveling this place. This will always be my home. It has to be.
Well, and you, like you said, I don't want to be known as the glass is not half empty. The glass is absolutely half full. You had a great career. You will always be remembered in this town. Lou Bellatier was waiting for you at the door when you walked in this morning because you're Joe Macy. So it's great having you on, but I want to switch gears. We've already gone over half an hour. Boxing. I grew up I remember as a kid, Joe, Cassius Clay is fighting Sonny Liston. It wasn't available on television anywhere. But on radio, after the round was over, an announcer would come on and do a description of the fight, of that round. I mean, they couldn't do it live. And I remember sitting, this sounds like it was 1932. It was like 1963 or whatever it was, 62. And so we followed boxing. I mean, it was like a huge part of American sport. Now, boxing has gone the way, I mean, the MMA and UFC has really taken over, especially with the younger generation, right? Now, so this is what I want to ask you. You wrestled a little bit in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're a boxer. Do you think coming up now, would mixed martial arts have been an avenue for you?
No, I would have had to start real early. You know, it's funny. Do you know, after I stopped boxing, my last match, 2007, that was when Brock Lesnar and Kimbo Slice,
oh yeah,
he passed, were making their way up. Now, I was getting offers. Joe, do you want to fight Holyfield in Europe? You could fight in Europe. And I'm like, well, geez, if I fight, the brain damage kid fights the old man, it looks like, it doesn't look good. I was afraid.
Yeah,
I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I don't know. Then it started getting circusy. I'm like, but what if I offered to box Brock Lesnar? I sent emails out. I have them saved to Kimbo Slice's manager, Brock Lesnar's manager. I go, boxing match. I want to box. We'll split revenue on pay-per-view. They're like, no. One of the responses says, didn't you wrestle? Why don't you do a cage match with him? I'm like, I said, because he'll break my limbs. I would try to climb out. It wouldn't even be fair. I wouldn't last.
Right.
They're not the same sport. I'm becoming a fan of UFC. It's exciting. And the promotions, Dana White is incredible. I don't follow it as closely, but I love it. It's not the same
sport.
Joe,
it's going to be on the front lawn of the White House in 2026.
And Dana White's getting involved in boxing, and I support it. He's doing such a great job. Maybe it's what it needs. I mean, why not?
Who's the heavyweight champ right now?
Usyk. He's a former cruiserweight champ. He had some good fights. He's a good fighter. He's a Ukraine guy. And now that Tyson Fury and Wilder are kind of getting towards retirement, it's really not worth watching. The other night was one of the best fights, Crawford and Canelo, that I watched till 2:30 in the morning. It's ridiculous how late they are. But there's not a ton of stars, and the promotions aren't that great. And I love, I tell you, I do a lot of keynote speaking. I speak at colleges, I speak at schools, I speak at high schools, I speak to former athletes. Boxing is the best sport in the world, and I don't know how to portray this. My poor wife has to fall asleep to it three nights a week. It is the best sport in the world. It's a shitty business. It's shitty. And so, I thought maybe I could do something. There's no National Hockey League. There's no organization. Not to mention, those are pretty shady too. But there's no organization. It's run by state commissions in the U.S. and promoters. There's no one. They've changed the rules as they go. How many people have knowingly fought with subdural hematomas?
Right.
And they got to. I'm looking out for the safety of these fighters. It's just not a great
business. Men with money have used and abused boxers since the dawn of time. And you're right, and there's been fights that have been rigged. I mean, it's been documented.
It's not a collegiate sport either. You know why boxing movies are the best? The best boxers come, they're poor, they come from the ghetto. It's not the boxing, it's the overcoming story.
It was the only way out, right?
They didn't go to University of Mississippi. You know what I mean? They didn't get a degree. And make, you know, it's not, even if you did grow up poor and you end up going to Ohio State, you know, you're still in, you know, these stories are the best. But I'm asked all the time, I'm telling you, I was asked the other day, like, Baby Joe, my son's 13, he wants to get into boxing, where should he go locally? And I really don't know. And like, well, you're not involved? I'm like, I'm really not. And that was back in the day, I didn't capitalize, Bob. Because I'm not involved. And people think, why don't you own a gym? Why don't you manage fighters? Why are you not doing this and that training? And I'm like, I wouldn't be a good trainer. And I don't want to be Rocky Balboa. I don't want to, do I have to wear cutoff gloves and like sweep a gym up? I don't want to be portrayed as if that's all I know.
Why didn't you open an Italian restaurant?
I mean, I would have done.
You could have done that. That's what Rocky did.
I didn't do that because I'd be 300 pounds. But no. Those were ideas too. But a lot of my depression, now I went into another drug depression after my last fight with Shannon Miller. Got, you know, think of this as before kids, had a couple bucks, you know, now I don't have it. But and I'm like, you know, I'm out and about, like, what am I gonna do? Like, now it's the point where, what am I gonna do? Am I gonna have a gym? Am I gonna train people? Am I gonna I was getting like these bullshit job offers. I'm like, I don't want to look like, I ran for office.
Right.
I ran for office fully intended for my love of this community. And little did I know that I'm much more mature and educated now. That was a difficult seat, a Senate seat. I dedicated 12 months, a year, for a Senate seat. Like, those are usually, I mean, $2 million of fundraising. And that took a year. And that loss, won the primary, loss also put me in a little spin. I got married 4 days after the general election, where I lost by like 3 points. And what saved my life, Bob, is my current job. I'm in medical device sales. It's been 16 or 17 years. I'm an award-winning salesman. I don't even know if I know how to sell, but I've sold to in the neuro space, neuroscience, neurosurgery. I've been doing it for 16 years, and I love it. Does my name help? Maybe. I don't know. I just enjoy something that I am good at, and that was my concern. What am I going to do? That I always wanted to like broadcast and call fights. Is that a full-time job? I mean, and did I leave the legacy and name that Roy Jones Jr. did? I even tried out on HBO and ESPN, which I did a little ESPN. So I love boxing. I don't mind being around it. The sport is so great. When I do my keynote speaking, boxing and life, there is no better and easier metaphor. There just isn't. And I can't believe God gave me this. I don't want to say gift of boxing. He gave me the tool of boxing because I learned so much about myself and about life. The gift was giving back to, you know, the community. I think people, if you have the gift to be even a little bit proficient in a sport, you likely have a higher calling. And I do think, not that I'm Mother Teresa, but I was able to raise money for this community. I'm able to motivate people. People stop me. I got an Uber driver. My wife and I took an Uber a few weeks ago, and the guy turned real quiet in my driveway. He goes, "Are you Joe Macy? You spoke to my 10th grade class." He goes, "And I was on a bad path, man. I was on a bad. I'll never forget your message." He said, "I got 3 jobs right now. You like were so great." Oh, cool. And these little things, and people that come up to me and tell me, you know, the fight in HBO. At HSBC Arena was Father's Day weekend. My father's no longer here. Man, we had dinner that night. We had some beers. It wasn't the fight. Thank you. It was the best night, one of my best memories of my father. I hear this all the time. I hear, I'm in line at the bank, and a guy goes, "Joe Macy." I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "You know, I went with my buddies to HSBC Arena, 9 of us. We took a limo, but it was my turn to buy beers. And I went and got all the beers. I can't carry all these beers. And I'm walking down the steps. I'm passing out. Doesn't one full beer fall on the woman in front of me on her head? I soaked her. I go, "Oh my God, was she pissed?" She's like, it was terrible. I was so embarrassed. I'm like, "What happened?" He goes, "Well, I left my friends. We went on a date." And he goes, "I married her a year later." And I go, and I left and got in my car. I'm like, man, there are so many great stories, not just of these nights, but, you know, I'm happy to have been able to do that. And I think, you know, I get letters a lot because I was involved in organ donation, and people that I got a letter, I got emails saved. My uncle passed. We knew organ donation was important to you as a boxing fan, so we donated his organs. I have like 10 of those emails and letters saved. I'm like, wow, I can't believe, was this the reason for all this? You know?
Well, Joe, why do you think I had you on the podcast? I mean, you're not just some Mama Luke, you know what I mean? This is Dennis would say. I mean, I followed the career. We had a great time together. I got to wrap this up, but we've got to have you back. You've got a great message. He's a handsome man. You don't look like you were a boxer.
It made improvements, actually. But, today, I do my sales job. I do some keynote speaking. I also do the podcast.
Plug your own podcast.
Gentleman Unscripted, which we've done a few episodes. And I do it with Jay Mano, who owns Soho, and Frankie Primos, North Tonawanda, and DJ Anthony, a radio personnel.
Right.
So the three of us were talking at a graduation party at Soho. I think it was early in the summer, talking about how the three of us have thought about podcasting and never took a step forward to it. And the three of us were standing there. We walked away. The party ended. And days later, we all texted each other. Well, why wouldn't we do something together, you know? So we just started.
Where can we find that?
So wherever podcasts are played, YouTube, Facebook, at Gentleman Unscripted, Instagram, and Spotify. So what's unique about ours? we don't have a studio. We are going to pop up where we pop up. We are just in different locations. We could be at a car dealership. We could be at a restaurant. We could be at a Bills game. We don't do studios. We are going to be where we're going to be, and we are going to be unscripted. Our agreement was, don't call me and tell me what you're wearing. I don't care about what we're going to talk about the topics. We're not doing review, but we're going to have great, great guests, whether they're boxing guests, rappers, and we're going to talk about everything.
Okay. Got to wrap it up. It's been a pleasure, buddy.
Bob, thank you for everything.
Baby Joe Macy.
Thank you.
He's the best. We'll be back next week with more. Next episode of Nuff Said with Bob Kuczynski. We're talking Buffalo Bills with Jay Skursky, the Bills beat reporter. Until then, have yourselves a great night and much better tomorrow.